This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Well-known Russian military blogger Vladlen Tatarsky was killed by a bomb blast in a St. Petersburg cafe on Sunday. It appeared to be the second assassination on Russian soil of a figure closely associated with the war in Ukraine. Russia's State Investigative Committee said it had opened a murder investigation. St. Petersburg governor says 25 people were wounded and 19 of them were being treated in hospital. Saudi Arabia and other major oil producers say they will cut production by more than 1 million barrels per day through the end of this year. AP correspondent Mimi Montgomery reports.
Shortly after a Saudi announcement on planned production cuts by 500,000 oil barrels per day until the year end, various other major producers, including the UAE, Iraq, Algeria, and Kazakhstan, are informing they'll make similar but smaller reductions for a total of 1.15 million barrels daily. The surprising moves could bring an increase in oil prices globally and strain relations with the U.S. Higher oil prices can benefit Russian President Vladimir Putin in his war on Ukraine and force Americans and others to pay even more at the pump amid inflation partly fueled by that war. I'm Mimi Montgomery.
In a television interview Sunday, Joe Tacopina, the attorney for former U.S. President Donald Trump, told ABC TV's This Week that he will devise a legal strategy once he reads the indictment handed down last week by a grand jury in New York City.
We're way too early to start deciding what motions we're going to file or not file, and we do need to see the indictment and get to work. I mean, look, Tuesday's just the beginning.
Two people familiar with the matter have told the Associated Press that Trump is facing multiple charges of falsifying business records, including at least one felony offense. He will be formally arrested and arraigned Tuesday in the case for allegedly paying a porn star in exchange for keeping quiet about an affair. This is VOA News. Finland's left-wing Prime Minister Sanna Marin conceded defeat on Sunday in the Nordic country's tightly fought parliamentary elections. Election results from the Justice Ministry shows that with all ballots counted, the pro-business National Coalition Party was expected to win 48 of the 200 seats in Parliament, narrowly ahead of the Nationalist Finns Party with 46 seats and Marin's Social Democrats with 43 seats. The 37-year-old Marin was the world's youngest prime minister when she took office in 2019. She is considered by fans around the globe as a millennial role model for progressive new leaders, but at home she has faced criticism for her partying and her government's public spending. Iranian women on Sunday condemned a recent attack of a man dumping yogurt on an unveiled mother and daughter in a shop believed to be in northeastern Iran. Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam reports.
Judicial authorities issued arrest warrants for the man, and state media said the two women were also the subject of arrest warrants for flouting Iran's strict female dress rules. Growing numbers of women have defied authorities by discarding their veils after nationwide protests that followed the death of a 22-year-old Iranian Kurdish woman in the custody of the morality police for allegedly violating hijab rules. Security forces violently put down that revolt.
That was Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam. Residents across a wide area of the U.S. South and Midwest raced to assess the destruction Sunday wreaked by storms that dropped possibly dozens of tornadoes and killed at least 29 people in small towns and big cities. The storms tore a path through the capital city in the state of Arkansas and collapsed the roof of a packed concert venue in the state of Illinois near Chicago. People throughout the region were stunned by the scope of the damage. And in sports, the Louisiana State University Tigers defeated the Iowa Hawkeyes Sunday to win the championship of U.S. Women's Major College Basketball. AP correspondent Denny Kapp reports.
LSU wins its first national championship in program history, defeating Iowa 102-85. Jasmine Carson knocked down five threes, scoring 21 of her team-high 22 points in the first half as LSU took a 59-42 lead into the break.
Every player dreams of being on a big stage like this and, you know, having a game of your life, and for it to, you know, come into fruition, you know, it meant a lot.
Iowa's Caitlin Clark hit a national championship record 9 triples to lead all scorers with 30 points. Clark also set new records for total points scored and three-pointers made in an NCAA tournament. I'm Denny Kapp.
For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com. We also have an app that you can download to search for VOA News. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
¶¶ Today is Monday, April 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chin Edwofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukraine's president expresses optimism over the raging battles in Bakhmut amid calls for peace talks.
An international arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin raises the prospects of justice, but may complicate efforts to end the war in Ukraine peacefully.
The top U.S. diplomat heads to Brussels as NATO meets to shore up support for Ukraine.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken heads to Brussels for European Union and NATO meetings, focused on continued support for Kyiv.
And U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris ends an historic trip to Africa. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Sunday that the military situation around the city of Bakhmut, besieged by Russian forces for months, was, quote, especially hot, unquote. Russian forces have for months been trying to encircle and capture Bakhmut, a town of 70,000 before the Russian invasion launched over a year ago. In his video address, Zelensky also said two people had died in a Russian mortar attack near the town of Konotop in northeastern region of Sumy. He noted earlier reports that Russian shelling had killed six people in the city of Kostantinivka in the Donetsk region in eastern Ukraine. 11 people were wounded. Serbia and Hungary are among countries raising concerns that the ICC's war crimes warrant for Putin could complicate peace talks with Ukraine. Associated Press correspondent Mimi Montgomery reports.
Concerns are raised that Putin's war crimes warrant could jeopardize Ukraine peace talks. An international arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin raises the prospects of justice but may complicate efforts to end the war in Ukraine peacefully. And this conflicting relationship is a quandary ahead of a March 17 decision by the International Criminal Court, which claims there are reasonable grounds to believe Putin is responsible for the war crime of unlawful deportation and transfer of children from occupied areas of Ukraine. Weighing in, Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić says the warrant creates a great reluctance to talk about peace and truce in Ukraine, and a top Hungarian government official warns it could lead toward escalation, not peace. I'm Mimi Montgomery.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is heading to Brussels on Monday for a meeting of NATO foreign ministers expected to focus on sustaining support for Ukraine. The meeting comes shortly after Finland's bid to join NATO was ratified by the Parliament of Turkey, the last of the Western Defense Alliance's 30 members to do so. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Turkey's parliament has approved a bill to allow Finland to join NATO. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg congratulated Helsinki on the fastest ratification process in the alliance's modern history.
Finland will formally join our alliance in the coming days. Their membership will make Finland safer and NATO stronger.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year marked a turning point for both Sweden and Finland, prompting both to reverse decades of non-alignment and apply to join NATO. Finland shares a 1,300-kilometer border with Russia. Neither Turkey nor Hungary has indicated it will ultimately support Sweden's bid. Finland's approval comes as Secretary of State Antony Blinken heads to Brussels for European Union and NATO meetings, focused on continued support for Kyiv. The last NATO foreign ministers' meeting was in Bucharest, Romania, last November. The U.S. strongly supports both Finland and Sweden joining NATO as soon as possible. One expert told VOA that Finland joining is a big win for both Helsinki and NATO, and a setback for Russian President Vladimir Putin. The recent visit by Chinese leader Xi Jinping to Russia will also likely be a topic of discussion in Brussels. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen had this to say this week.
We have to be frank on this point. How China continues to interact with Putin's war will be a determining factor for EU-China relations going forward.
Kimmich told VOA that it is difficult to gauge just how significant the meeting between Putin and Xi was, But there appears to be some tension lingering below the surface between Beijing and Moscow about how Russia is prosecuting the war with no end in sight. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The U.S. Vice President has concluded her week-long visit to Ghana, Tanzania, and Zambia, where she reiterated Washington's commitment to strengthening cooperation with the African continent. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is the latest high-profile U.S. official to visit the African continent as part of President Joe Biden's commitment to expand its partnership with African countries to meet shared challenges and opportunities. The three nations she visited each had particular ties with the U.S., Ghana being a long-standing democracy and partner with Washington. Zambia and Tanzania have seen an upward trajectory in democratic governance. In her message to the continent, Harris emphasized the need for the U.S. and Africa to build close ties on areas of mutual interest.
The relationship between the United States and this continent and African leaders is an important one. There's a historical basis for the relationship, not to mention as we look forward, as all governments should, and recognize the unachieved, as of yet, opportunities that exist going forward.
Ngosa Chisupa is a Zambian governance expert who says Harris' visit demonstrates U.S. commitment to strengthening democracy in Africa. Chisupa says the U.S. has been very instrumental in bilateral support to Zambia since 1964.
The fact that Zambia co-hosted the Democracy Summit also highlighted the importance that Zambia is being regarded within the global group of nations. Whilst in Zambia, for Madam Kamala Harris, this visit, I think, meant more to her because of the events that happened 55 years ago when she actually came to visit her then maternal grandfather, Mr. P.V. Gopalan.
Harris' grandfather was a diplomat at the time. Political analyst Boniface Chembe says the visit is important for Africa-U.S. ties, in part because she came with pledges of billions of dollars of public and private aid. The aid will be for issues such as climate change mitigation and youth empowerment.
Oftentimes, there is a misperception that America does not do enough and that Africans do not benefit anything from any kind of engagement with Africans. What Kamala Harris's trip has done is to basically bring to the fore America's involvement on the continent and the extent to which this engagement has been able to benefit the people of Africa. The packages that have been announced during her visit are commendable, are welcome, and they will go a long way in ensuring that the people of Africa continue to appreciate what the United States of America's engagement entails.
In each of the countries she visited, Harris advocated for increasing the role of women in economic and political life. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
In other news, residents across a wide swath of the U.S. are racing to assess the destruction from fierce storms that spawned possible dozens of tornadoes from South and the Midwest into the Northeast, killing at least 29 people. Confirmed or suspected tornadoes struck 11 states and destroyed homes and businesses, splintered trees and laid waste to neighborhoods. The dead included 9 people in one Tennessee county and 4 in the small town of Wayne, Arkansas. President Joe Biden declared broad areas of the country major disaster areas, making federal resources and financial aid available to support recovery. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Gina Duofo in Washington. With Donald Trump becoming the first former U.S. president to face criminal charges, VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports on international reaction to his indictment and what it means for the credibility of the U.S. legal and political system.
Donald Trump often encouraged his supporters in chants of lock her up at his rallies, saying his political opponent, Hillary Clinton, should go to prison for using a private email server. But it is Trump who now finds himself indicted by a New York grand jury over a $130,000 hush money payment made to an adult film actor in the weeks before the 2016 election. Trump has denied any wrongdoing and accused the Manhattan District Attorney who brought the charges, Alvin Bragg, a Democrat, of pursuing a political witch hunt to thwart his bid for the White House in 2024. President Joe Biden declined to comment when he was asked if he was concerned about protests after the indictment. In New York, a small group turned out to say Trump should face a fair trial for the charges a grand jury of ordinary Americans agreed to bring against him. In West Palm Beach, Florida, near where Trump lives, defenders came out to support him. Trump had called for massive protests if he is indicted. One expert told VOA the whole world will be watching to see if the protests are peaceful or if political violence erupts as it did on January 6, 2021, when Trump supporters seized the U.S. Capitol.
I think it's going to be a kind of benchmark for other countries to see if the spirit of January 6th is over and done with, or if there's still the potential for civic unrest in the U.S. related to these questions of President Trump and President Biden and the transition from one to the other and the kind of current status of President Trump.
A number of prominent Republicans have joined Trump in denouncing the indictment as politically motivated, including former Vice President Mike Pence and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Both are viewed as potential competitors with Trump for the Republican presidential nomination. This troubles one expert who spoke with VOA. Until now, the closest the U.S. has ever been to indicting a former president was Richard Nixon. Facing likely impeachment, he resigned and left the White House in 1974. Nixon did not face criminal charges because he was pardoned by his successor, Gerald Ford.
Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
But a number of other democratic countries have investigated, prosecuted, and in many cases convicted and jailed former leaders, including South Korea, Italy, and France. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is currently on trial on corruption charges. Cecile Shea told VOA she is concerned about Trump's potentially widening legal troubles because of what she described as almost a cult of personality among his supporters. She noted the political climate in America is much more emotional and polarized today than when Nixon left office nearly 50 years ago. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Thank you, Cindy. Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal al-Mikdad visited Cairo in the first visit by a top Syrian official in more than 14 years to the Egyptian capital. Speculations is that both countries will soon reestablish diplomatic ties following a recent move by Saudi Arabia to renew relations with its longtime nemesis and ally of Syria, Iran. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The visit by Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal al-Mikdad to Cairo is yet another sign of impending normalization among many Arab governments in Damascus, despite hesitation to make any direct move that would anger the U.S. Both Syria and Egypt have continued to cooperate on security matters in the years since Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi came to power in 2014, although diplomatic ties have remained severed since 2011. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sama Shoukry underscored during the meeting with Mikdad that Egypt was doing what was in the best interest of both the Egyptian and Syrian peoples. Shoukry says he welcomes the chance to resume dialogue between both sides and the importance of continuing coordination and consultations to move mutual relations forward and to work to preserve the unity of the Syrian state and to return it to its Arab neighborhood. Syrian Foreign Minister Mikdad thanked Shoukry for making the first move in breaking the ice with Damascus by visiting Syria in the wake of the deadly earthquake that shook the region in February. He says that Syria thanks Egypt for its direct relations with his country during the earthquake, and both the government and its people are grateful for the help provided during the quake, which affected several Syrian provinces. Journalists were not allowed to ask questions, as is normally the case during diplomatic visits, and the absence of a press conference appeared to signal a reluctance to formally spell out the slow normalization of ties between both countries. Egyptian Member of Parliament Mustafa Bakri told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that official Egyptian sources informed him there is not likely to be a formal meeting between Egyptian President Sisi and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in the immediate future, despite media speculation to the contrary. He also insisted there was no agreement to have Egyptian companies participate in rebuilding Syria either. Joshua Landis, who leads the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, tells VOA that Syria is being slowly reintegrated back into the Arab world, but it isn't clear yet whether it will be returned to the Arab League by the May Arab Summit in Saudi Arabia. Qatar, he notes, has said it will not support the return of Syria to the Arab League and will not forgive Assad for his brutal war. Egypt has been taking an important role in welcoming Syria back into the embrace of its fellow Arab countries, Landis noted. Arab governments, he emphasized, are trying to negotiate some important concessions from the Assad regime, beginning with cracking down on the Captagon drug smuggling trade, limiting Iran's influence in Syria, and guaranteeing the safe return of Syrian refugees. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq tells VOA that Egypt has always been close to Syria and it doesn't want to escalate with the Syrian regime. The Mikdad visit Saturday, he says, can be seen as part of new alliances emerging in the area, including cooperation with both Russia and China.
Saudi Arabia and Egypt are now not abandoning the U.S., but expanding and boosting the relations with other parties and using the local currency in the bilateral trade in many of the dealings. China has recently canceled some of the debt to Egypt.
Khattar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA he sees a limit to the extent of a rapprochement between Egypt and other Arab countries with Syria over fears of U.S. potential economic sanctions. He says that Dubai recently closed a Russian bank over U.S. sanctions concerns, and he asserted the UAE, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia are afraid of U.S. sanctions on any dealings with Syria and al-Assad. The U.S. obstacle, he adds, is not a small obstacle and is most likely to be an insurmountable barrier. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of astronomers says that they have discovered one of the biggest black holes that have been found so far. Led by James Nightingale from the UK's Durham University, the team has found evidence that this monster black hole has a mass of 33 billion suns. This ultra-massive black hole was found in a giant elliptical galaxy near the center of the Abel 1201 galaxy cluster, located about 2.7 billion light-years away. Helped by images from the Hubble Space Telescope and a supercomputer, the scientists spotted the giant black hole by using gravitational lensing, an astronomical technique that uses objects such as galaxy clusters to magnify distant objects behind them. The discovery was detailed in a study published by the Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
How do you get international news? Radio, television, social media, or all of the above? Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp. Leave a message, comments, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. dial the international code plus 1, then 202-258-3076.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA on issues in the news on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Gene Edwards in Washington. Wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
April 4th marks the release date of the State Department's 22nd To Walk the Earth in Safety report, issued by the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement and the Bureau of Political Military Affairs. Its goal is to highlight the United States' accomplishments in conventional arms destruction. This is crucial work because even decades after a conflict had ended, explosive remnants of war pose a deadly hazard to people during daily activities. At the same time, improperly secured small arms, light weapons, and munitions may easily end up in the hands of the lawless, resulting in criminality that can destabilize an entire region and hinder recovery. So, for example, we're preventing unplanned ammunition explosions at ammunition depots where things may not be properly stored. And so then, they're at risk of exploding, said Karen Chandler, Acting Deputy Assistant Secretary for Programs and Operations in the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs.
In terms of the landmines and explosive ordnance removal, that is a top priority because we are saving innocent lives. The casualties when we started the program in the 1990s were around 20,000 casualties per year. That number has gone down to approximately 5,000 casualties per year. And finally, in areas where conflict has just concluded, it allows people to safely return to their homes.
Last year, said Ms. Chandler, we've cleared more than 243 million square meters of land. This year, the largest program is in Ukraine, she said.
We were able to fund Ukraine clearance operations at about $90 million this year. We also have a $45 million a year program in Laos that we fund. And we spend about $40 million in Iraq. And our next largest one is the $24 million we spend in Colombia. And then finally in Vietnam, we spend about $20 million a year as well.
We're really spreading our work worldwide and hitting some of the hardest hit areas that we need to, said Ms. Chandler. It's a program that we really feel has tangible benefits in terms of preventing children's and innocent people's deaths, but also increasing prosperity and economic opportunity in the areas where we have provided clearance operations. We're able to see farmers returning to clear and farm their land. In terms of critical infrastructure, we're allowing utilities to function again. It's really protecting civilian populations from harm.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.